Merry Christmas, everyone, and welcome to Hopelessly Romantic Behind the Page. I hope you all had a lovely holiday. And if you don't celebrate, I hope you had a great week. I do realize that Christmas is past us now, but technically it doesn't end until Epiphany on the 7th, so I'm going to indulge and enjoy a little more Christmas as we look at Lord Grantwell's Christmas wish one last time. So it's our first historical novel since about, I think, September, when we went over a blues singer to redeem him. And it's our first Regency-era novel since we finished up An Unexpected Earl, so I could probably safely say that it's been a minute. It's, when we're talking about these historical novels, I'm really focused on the prose, and it's harder for me to judge the prose on something like, say, a blues singer. Unfortunately, whenever I read anything that's been set in the 1920s, the language feels a little off. Stilted somehow. It's kind of hard to explain. Like, you know that meme, "How do you do, fellow kids?" It feels like that. Sometimes I'll experience some media from the 20s, or it looks like it's from the 20s, and it almost feels like it's not genuine. It's not all the time, but I'm not sure if, like, certain slang just sounds off to me. You know, like, oh, that's the bee's knees, that kind of thing. Or I'm just not sure if 20th-centric creators haven't quite finessed an authentic experience with the features that I've read and seen. Like, even, say, Disney's Princess and the Frog, that sounded strange. It's, again, like I said, it's really hard to explain. But when it comes to an English historical setting, at least back into Elizabethan or even Tudor England, I'm better at picking out naturally sounding vernacular. This might have something to do with both my love of the bard and my endless hours practically growing up at Renaissance festivals. At the Renaissance festivals, I was exposed to both very bad and very good English, old English, or no, excuse me, modern, early modern English accents. So I guess what I'm kind of getting at with this big runaround is, was the prose in Christmas Wish authentic? Well, some of the dialogue felt authentic, but I also kind of felt like it wavered here and there. I think there's something about the lack of contractions, like instead of saying can't or couldn't, we'd say could not or cannot, that sort of thing. And it can kind of stifle flowing dialogue. It might sound fancier, but it also really makes it sound formal and dry. As for the narration itself, it didn't immerse itself into Regency vernacular the way that I would have preferred. So I'm going to look back at A Wolf in Duke's Clothing for a second. One of the reasons that it ended up on the Gold Star shelf was because the story knew what it was. It was a Regency romance, wolf shifters aside. The narration along with the dialogue worked in tandem to deliver a believable story, that it immersed the reader into the world of the beau monde. I didn't get the same immersion with Christmas Wish, which is a shame because I did enjoy the book. It could have just gone a teensy bit further and it would have been perfect. Commit to the bit, as it were. Slightly related, does anyone know when the next season of Bridgerton's coming out? I'm really becoming quite enamored with the Regency era. But moving on to the story itself, I'm not sure if the author was trying to set up an overarching conspiracy with Christmas Wish. Let's go ahead and compare it to something like An Unusual Duke, which is the other Regency novel that we've read. It was easy to tell that something bigger was obviously going on. There is the armory, that whole entire secret society focused on uncovering whatever the heck conspiracy was going on in the criminal underworld. And it featured very heavily in our story. Here, we've got a possible conspiracy plot committed by a random servant, but I'm not sure why. We're told that he has his reasons. So what are those reasons? Maybe I missed it. Maybe I was too distracted by the Christmas cuteness. I am pretty much all over the place right now. So if I genuinely did miss the villain I want song next to his confession, I'll own up to it. we're a little scatterbrained around the holidays, right? But I would like to know a little bit more. I'm not sure if I would have to go back and read the other book in this series, the first one before. Gosh, what was it called? Her Gallant Captain or something like that? Her Gallant English Captain? I don't know. There's another one. And I can't remember what it's called. I don't know if I'm going to have to read that one in order to figure out what's going on, if there's a bigger plot happening. I don't know if the inciting incident here, where Lillian was supposedly the spy and whatnot, we don't know if that met up inside of that story. I'm not going to know until I read it. I don't know if I will read it, because things are going to be moving forward. It's hard for me to go back and look at something. Speaking of which, we talked about the lack of spice, right? I've already ranted a bit about it in the actual episode. You can hear my thoughts on the fact that our ladies are always raring to go no matter what because, you know, woo, sexy. very dry, if you ask me. Today, I've already referenced the spicier novels in the Regency genre, A Wolf in Duke's Clothing and An Unexpected Earl in our episode. But I need you to note that both of these selections come from outside the Harlequin umbrella. I'm really reminded of when I first started this podcast. I thought Harlequin was salacious. I thought it was scandalously sexy. Something to hide or maybe even be a little ashamed of. Oh no, I have Harlequin on my shelf. Little did I know. It's very clear to me now that if I want something truly spicy or a thoroughly erotic book, I need to start looking outside the little red Harlequin covers. I've already had a couple of recommendations so far, and a package straight from Sourcebooks itself arrived only yesterday at my door. So if you want spice, you're gonna get spice. I have a couple of other things coming up first. I have my schedule listed out, but I promise the spice will flow. Now with all of that out of the way, we can look at what Heather's reading this week, which is not a ding-dong darn thing. Sorry. Like all of us, during this time of year, I have had a lot on my plate lately. And unfortunately, the only time that I've really had to look out for proper reading or to have proper reading time is what I've been reading for this podcast. Mostly, I've been keeping to other podcasts to listen to since they are quick and easily digestible. My favorites lately have included Sawbones, The Overly Sarcastic Podcast, Musical Splaining, and Spirits. My technical advisor and I also like to listen to Morbid and This American Life. But I am not going to leave you without some interesting tidbits today. Oh no. Now that I've got a captive audience, I can gush about my favorite Christmas stories and traditions. Okay, you're not exactly captive. You can turn off the episode at any time, but I'm going to gush anyway. So while I was reading Christmas Wish, see, I'm going to connect this. Don't you worry, this is connected. I mentioned that I was looking up all those little traditions that they were experiencing in the story while I was reading. It was probably the highlight of my experience. And I tell you what, I eat this stuff up with a spoon. Because the thing about Christmas, or at least American Christmas, is that it is the melting pot of holidays. There are traditions from all over the world that have made their way somehow into so many of the Christmas traditions that we love. For example, have you ever noticed that whenever you might buy a new glass ornament set for your Christmas tree or go into an ornament store, there's always a strange little ornament there, a green glass pickle? So since when were pickles a Christmas thing, why make it into an ornament? Well, the story as I know it goes like this. In a German tradition, a German Christmas tradition, some folks don't decorate the Christmas tree during the beginning of the season. It remains plain, waiting for Christmas Eve. That's when Sinterklaas will come, and he will decorate the tree with candies, gifts, and other little goodies for the good children in the house. But while he is decorating, he also hides a green pickle inside the tree. And the next morning, when the kids are enjoying their Christmas splendor, they're also looking for that pickle, because Sinterklaas has left an extra gift for the most observant child. And if Christmas is the melting pot of holidays, my dad is first in line to dip into this Yuletide fondue. The moment he heard about this tradition, he immediately put it into practice. No, he didn't follow all the way through. He did not leave the decorating of the Christmas tree for Christmas Eve. He's not that crazy. But he sure as heck did tell Santa to hide the pickle inside the tree. And my brother and I took this task very seriously, because whoever found that pickle got an entire can of olives to Christmas dinner for themselves. What can I say? We like olives. And that's kind of what the fun part is. We heard about a tradition and we incorporated it into our own family. And I'm going to do that with my own kids when I have them myself. And what is up with that orange at the bottom of the stocking anyway? Asked no one. But no. This is another one of my favorites. If you ever get the chance, if you need something to sit and Google, if you got a moment, I highly recommend you look up Saint Nicholas, the actual guy our Santa Claus is based on. He has a wide range of responsibilities. Unsurprisingly, he is known as the patron saint of children, but did you know that he is also the patron saint of sailors, repentant thieves, and pawnbrokers? That last one is of particular interest. The story that I've heard goes like this. There was a poor man with three daughters, and he had no money for their dowries. As each daughter came of age to be married, Saint Nicholas tossed a bag of gold down the chimney while they slept, and the gold would land in the shoes that had been set there to dry. At the time, churches ran a sort of pawn shop circuit so that poor people could sell things and afford money that they could eat, and they could buy food. And through his act to support the poor with this gold down the chimney business, it marked Saint Nicholas as a patron saint of the poor, and therefore of pawnbrokers. If you've ever wondered why every pawn shop has those three gold balls on their signs or on their wall somewhere, it's a reference to this story. And over time, as cultural osmosis and evolution chugs along doing its thing, the shoes became stockings and the bags of gold become an orange. There's another aspect here as well. Before folks started competing with Christmas lights, if you wanted to keep up with the Joneses, you decorate the house with fruit. Before our age of globalization, fruit in December was a big deal, citrus especially. It might seem surprising today that I could get into my car right now and buy a giant bag of oranges down at the local Costco. But a couple of centuries ago, or even sooner than that, last century even, that would have been a luxurious purchase of the highest degree. So giving someone an orange was an incredible gift, basically the equivalent of getting the latest gaming console. So I hope y'all appreciated those oranges in your stockings this year. I really could go on forever about Christmas traditions, and I probably got on longer than I should. Like, you know, how gift fruit is still a very much welcome thing in Korea, or about the Italian Christmas witch who leaves gifts for children as she searches for the Christ child, or how in Japan, people make reservations at KFC, yes, that KFC, in order to be sure that they can have their fried chicken on Christmas Day. Jury is still out on that last one about whether or not it's an actual thing, because I haven't been able to verify it. Korean fried chicken is better anyway. But yeah, if you drop me at, like, let's say Epcot's World Showcase, you could probably follow me along with a little recorder of some kind as I talk about holiday nonsense from all over the world. I'm full of this stuff. But now as our season is winding down, I really do want to take a moment to tell you that it's okay to take a breather. Everything's been kind of pretty crazy this last year, last couple years. I should probably say that I'm completely off script. I usually go with points for the behind the page, but I haven't really made a point, like little bullet points for this one. So this is going to be just me talking about, like, you know, things are nuts. Things have been really crazy. There have been really bad moments last year, and there have also been really good moments, I would like to think, this year as well. I guess to kind of get really serious, I didn't think I would get this far on this podcast. Sometimes I feel like I can start a project and just never follow through. So this is probably one of the biggest things that I've done. So for people who have been listening, thank you so much. I'm really excited that I've stuck with it this long, and I'm really excited that I've got more things coming up. I have schedules now. I have a plan for the next, you know, couple of months. And one of my big New Year's resolutions for last year was, I think, just to kind of just generally improve. The whole New Year's resolution thing can be a little frustrating because we wake up on New Year's Day and we try to do everything brand new. The problem is that if we do everything brand new, it's very, very difficult. So if you wake up January 1st and you get into the very same New Year's resolution that everyone does, I'm going to organize my house, or I'm going to start the business, and then I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to do all of these 100 different things. And then you start on January 1st, and by January 8th, you're done. Because we all try to do so much at once. The thing that I had to figure out with the podcast is that if you try to do everything at once, it's not going to work out. If I have a flaw when it comes to the creative endeavors, I overplan. I have to think that everything has to be just right before I can get started. And that never got me anywhere. Both my father and my technical advisor have explained to me that if you try to be perfect when you start, you're never going to start. And now that I'm, you know, more than half a year, 3/3 of a year into this kind of thing, now I have firsthand experience of how that's true. My first few episodes are horrible. They don't even have the same name. I started as Heather Reads the Podcast, and it had a couple of other names before that. And then I made the change to Hopelessly Romantic, and that was the better change. But if I had waited until that idea came to my mind to start the podcast, I don't think the podcast would have started. I would have still been sitting on my butt, not doing anything productive with my degree or with my interests, and just been generally frustrated. Hopelessly Romantic has been one of the best things I've done this year. And I'm extraordinarily proud of myself that I've done it. And I have to tell myself that it's because I took time. I learned while I went. I am using a new audio program. I am using different methods of how I organize my episodes. I am just now starting to look and find new books to read outside the Harlequin box. I've even got new equipment that I still need to learn how to use. New microphone. I'm really excited about that. So props to the guy who sent me that. Thank you. So time matters. And I feel like a lot of us, Americans especially, we have this instant gratification bug that we gotta itch. Like, you want that root beer float, you gotta have that root beer float right now. So if it's not perfect the first time, we get angry and frustrated. And that really got to me when I tried to make this start. And now I really am a lot more comfortable with this, and I'm more comfortable learning and growing as I go. So, this is my New Year's resolution for you. Think about the thing that you've always wanted to do. And now, don't be hard on yourself because you've never done it. If you were anything like me, you didn't want to do it because you wouldn't be perfect at it. But there's no such thing as perfection. My dad has been a magician since he found out that magic was a thing you could do, and he still considers himself a student. He is still always practicing. I have a degree in English literature, but I also am trying to make sure that I continually educate myself. That way I can continue to learn and grow within this podcast, and I can be learning more about the podcast. So let perfection go. That is the New Year's resolution, is let perfection go. I'm not saying that it's not going to happen, but if I've learned anything, perfection is always just on the other side. You find your goal, and then you meet the goal, but on your way to the first goal, you've probably made a second. So never stop working. But take your time. The tortoise and the hare is, you know, a story for a reason. If you go too fast, you're not going to get there in a satisfactory way. Take your time. Rest. Be kind to yourself. Just let perfection go. And remember to be kind to yourself. And remember that it's going to be okay. I am sitting here cheering for you. I am rooting for you in every single way possible because I really want you to get the thing. Go get the thing, but take your time. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to others. It has been so hard and ugly outside these days. I went into public for the first time a couple weeks ago into like really big crowded situations, and everyone was just angry. So be kind to yourself. Be kind to others. Let perfection go. I'm going to be taking this energy into the new year, and I want to pass it along to you. Do something kind for someone. Do something kind for yourself. Embrace self-care. And if you take it step by step, you might just start working toward the thing that you've always wanted to do. So, for the last time this year, I hope I see you again for Hopelessly Romantic. And I wish you a happy new year, and I wish you a cozy January, the very, very best new year, and I wish for everything good ahead of you. And if you want to start your new year doing absolutely nothing with zero resolutions, I fully support you. But I do, again, hope to see you next week when we read Homecoming Heartbreaker by Joss Wood. Thank you for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or want to recommend a read, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. Also, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will go a long way to help the show, and I can keep bringing you lots of fun episodes and keep my own New Year's resolution. This show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwang Hin Cho. Hopelessly Romantic is an H with K production. And it doesn't matter what you read, only that it is what you love.